sunny periods continuing through Friday. The highs in the mid-50s, lows in the upper 40s. And in downtown Seattle currently, it's 56 degrees. The barometer is holding steady. It reads 30.13.
It's the sound of bright and beautiful music. This is KIXI, Seattle.
And the news next on KIXI. It's 10 p.m.
CBS News. President Ford puts more distance between himself and Richard Nixon. I'm Jerry Landay reporting on the CBS Radio Network. Mr. Ford began unveiling a major new campaign theme in his closing days of campaigning in a television commercial unveiled Wednesday night, and in speeches throughout the day, the president suggested, and these are his words, there's a distinct difference between himself and Nixon. Mr. Ford said that he is not dictatorial, does not run what he called an imperial White House. The president said he has decentralized power within the administration and has restored the constitutional dimensions of the presidency. An imperial presidency, he said, is not my idea of the office. Carter has accused Mr. Ford of keeping too many Nixon appointees in White House jobs. Budget officials for the Ford administration revealed Wednesday that the government has failed to spend over the past 3 months nearly $8 billion which it was authorized to spend. The officials were unable to explain the spending slowdown. But the disclosure renewed speculation among economic experts that the withholding of the $8 billion from the bloodstream of the United States may have helped cause the current economic slowdown. Fewer government purchases can mean fewer new orders, less production, fewer jobs. More news after this.
On July 4th, we celebrated across the land. I'm George Herman, CBS News. On November 2nd, there's an even more meaningful event for our republic, Election Day. We'd like to count you in as we tally up the results on election night. So cast your vote, then listen as Neil Strauser and I anchor election night coverage on the CBS Radio Network. Neil Pierce will be with us for analysis, along with Jerry Landay, Sharon Lovejoy, Reed Collins, and Richard Threlkeld covering regional developments. We'll have three special reports for you every hour during the night, as well as updates in news on the hour and extended reports whenever the events warranted. You'll hear all the national returns and estimated results in the presidential race and in state and local contests. Remember, cast your vote, then hear it count when CBS News brings you complete election night coverage on the CBS Radio Network.
The Soviet Union offered a friendly hand to China again on Wednesday. The Soviet leader, Leonid Brezhnev, cabling congratulations to his new Chinese counterpart, Hua Guofeng, on his appointment to the leadership of the Chinese Communist Party. China rejected a message of condolence last month from Brezhnev on the death of Chairman Mao. China watchers say they expect no change in Peking's frigid attitude toward Moscow. That reading seemed to be confirmed Wednesday in the UN General Assembly, where Richard Hutterlet filed this report.
China has assailed the Soviet Union in the sharpest terms for its proposal of a world treaty on the non-use of force in international relations. The Soviet suggestion is regarded skeptically because this is what the United Nations Charter is all about. But China fired the first broadside against it. Ambassador Huang Hua called the Soviet proposal, quote, a sheer fraud, shop-worn trash to dupe the people of the world. The Soviet Union, he said, is conducting expansionist activities everywhere, infiltration, interference, subversion, and aggression against other countries. He brought up Czechoslovakia, occupied by the Soviet Union, he said, through the despicable means of surprise attack. He accused Moscow of helping dismember Pakistan and of using talk of détente to increase the offensive military forces it has deployed against Western Europe. China watchers chalked up another bit of evidence that the new leaders in Peking have not changed their thinking about their Soviet neighbor. Richard C. Hottle at CBS News, United Nations.
Sources in Washington say the International Monetary Fund has approved a loan of nearly $1 billion to Mexico, one of the largest loans in the fund's history. This follows Mexico's second effort to devalue the peso to help stem the flight of capital abroad. The peso plunged 25% in value Wednesday in relation to the dollar. Former Senator Edward Gurney of Florida has been acquitted of a charge of lying to a grand jury. Now this.
bronchial asthma, but I got a road to rip up, too.
So I take Bronchaid tablets. They help keep my occasional asthma attacks away for hours. Primatine tablets, they worked, but Bronchaid has something extra to help get rid of congestion. And with asthma, getting rid of bronchial congestion is really important. Bronchaid helps me breathe easy for hours. It works almost as hard as I do.
Bronchaid tablets do more to let you breathe easier. Use only as directed.
What do George Siegel, Karen Black, Elliot Gould, Petula Clark, and Natalie Cole have in common? You'd never guess. But in the new issue of Red Book, these stars and a dozen more reveal the one story they've never told. November Red Book. It's the biggest issue in Red Book's history. With 30 articles and features, including a startling study of sex on the job, a new $5,000 photography contest, an 8-page cookie and candy cookbook, a single woman's report on today's single men, plus 4 short stories and a complete novel. November Red Book. It's so big you won't believe it till you see it at your new stand.
In tape-recorded memoirs released posthumously, former Governor John Burns of Hawaii recalled that he had been warned of the 1941 Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor a week beforehand. Burns, who was then a Honolulu police captain, says he was given the Pearl Harbor warning by the head of the FBI office in Hawaii, Robert Shivers. Burns said he was reasonably sure the FBI warning had been passed to Army and Navy commanders in Hawaii. I'm Jerry Landay, CBS News.
KIXI Seattle, the weather outlook calls for increasing cloudiness with rain likely by tomorrow morning and rainy periods continuing through Friday. Highs in the mid-50s and lows in the upper 40s. In downtown Seattle, it's 56 degrees. The barometer is holding steady. It reads 30.13. Taking a look at sports, the National Basketball Association, Detroit downed over Seattle Supersonics 106-92. It was the New York Nets over Washington, 96-93. San Antonio, 115. Phoenix, 106. And Philadelphia beat Houston, 116-94. In the National Hockey League, Boston 4, the New York Rangers 3. Minnesota over Toronto by a score of 5-3. Pittsburgh tied with Buffalo at 4 each. And it was Montreal 4, Chicago 4. In the World Hockey Association, San Diego 5, Indianapolis 1. The CBS Radio Mystery Theater is coming up next on KIXI. The time now is 7 minutes past 10.
The CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents... Marshall. Many of the tales I bring you could be called gothic. This has become an umbrella word to cover so many things. The true gothic was a story about horror beyond belief, ghouls and gargoyles, the unexplained and the unexplainable, creatures from a world beyond comprehension. But my favorite gothic tales are the ones which only seem to borrow from that world. Stories in which the explanation lies in this mundane one we occupy. Gothic mysteries, perhaps they should be called. This is one of them.
So, the drawbridge still works, Jason.
As you see, Master Ted. Hey! Whoop, dear boy.
I wonder what it'll be like.
Marooned on an island once the bridge is taken away. Jason, if you knew Miss Barclay was coming, why wasn't the bridge left in place?
It's never left in place except when it's used.
For what? To keep the public out? Or shut the family in?
Our mystery drama, The Deathly White Man, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by Ian Martin and stars Betsy Palmer. It is sponsored in part by Buick Motor Division and True Value Hardware Stores. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
The standard engine is a V8. Standard tires, steel-belted radials. There are front and rear stabilizer bars, special springs and shock valving, fast ratio power steering, and a rally steering wheel. What makes all this interesting is that it belongs to a full-size six-passenger Buick, the 1977 LeSabre Sport Coupe. You'll have to drive it to believe it. Dedicated to the preacher, just about everyone.
Sylvia Porter. And if you read my daily newspaper column, you know how hard I try to help you stretch your dollars. Now I'm trying even harder. For my number one bestseller, Sylvia Porter's money book is in paperback. In it, you'll find all you want to know about money, how to earn it, spend it, save it, borrow it, invest it, use it to better your life. Buy Sylvia Porter's money book now. It's a super value.
Sylvia Porter's money book, now in Avon paperback.
Dreams. We all seek to understand the many ways in which God reveals His Word. The prophet Daniel praised God for the gift of interpreting dreams. May the name of God be blessed forever and ever, since wisdom and power are His alone, His to control the processions of times and seasons, to make and unmake kings, to confer wisdom on the wise, and knowledge on those with wit to discern, His to uncover depths and mysteries, and to know what lies in darkness, and light dwells within Him. Daniel was favored by King Nebuchadnezzar for his wisdom and truth, and his ability to interpret the mysteries of the king's dreams. For your free booklet on dreams and visions, write to the Foundation Faith, 1147 First Avenue, New York, New York, 10021. That's the Foundation Faith, 1147 First Avenue, New York, New York, 10021.
Roosevelts are one of the oldest families in the United States. Linda Barclay, on the other hand, although she can trace her lineage as far back as most of us care to, is a product of the Middle West. Her father's job brought him east to the accident that killed him and crippled his wife, making her totally dependent on Linda for the rest of her life. When her mother finally died, Linda found herself alone and without money. That's why she answered the mysterious advertisement, which has led her to the terrifying meeting with the Roosevelts and the curse of their history.
Well, you're younger than I might have expected, Miss Barclay.
That's something I'm scarcely able to do anything about, Mr. Roosevelt.
And I'm not quite sure this would be the right job for you. My wife is... Well, after her fall, she's more than ever an invalid.
But that's what I'm used to. That's what my mother was. Ever since I was 15, the carriage overturned on the bend in the road, and my father was killed, and my mother pinned under the wheel. She never walked again. I had to lift her, carry her. I'm very strong, and I've studied nursing, even if I don't have a degree.
Oh, yes, 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 my dear girl, you remember all that was in the letter when you replied to my advertisement.
You don't believe me?
Of course I do, but what is concerning me at the moment is... not so much how good you would be for my wife, but...
But what?
Well, as how good this job would be for you. Or bad.
I don't quite understand, Mr. Roosevelt.
Well, for many reasons we live, that is, my family lives quite a bit outside the city on an island, very isolated. My wife had a difficult time when our son was born, and in recent years her mental health has been... Well, she retrogresses year by year.
Oh.
She can be very difficult at times, especially now since her injury. It's so much more difficult for her now that she can't... Now that her mobility is impaired because of what happened, she mustn't... No. I'm afraid you'd have to be a kind of jailer, too, and make sure that she keeps to her own quarters and... Very well, then. Let's see how it works out, How soon can you leave?
As soon as I can pack. By tonight.
No. I shall drive up by carriage tonight myself. I need a little time to prepare my wife and the household for your arrival. You can take the train up tomorrow to Cos Cob. My housekeeper's son, Jason, will meet you at the train. His name is Jason Greaves.
Is it a large menage?
No, just Mrs. Greaves, my wife, Jason, a cleaning woman and a maid or so, and... And myself, of course, when I'm there. Business holds me a good deal to the city. Now, do you need money? No. Better than that. Here are some traveling expenses.
$50? Well, that's far more than enough.
Well, we can straighten things out once you get to Broomwagon.
Where?
Oh, I'm sorry. That's the old Dutch manor that we live in. Built over 3 centuries ago.
Ah. Oh. How did Mrs. Rensselaer injure herself?
Why, she fell down a flight of stairs. We don't know why. There were quite severe head injuries, and she's now confined to a wheelchair.
Was it the way he said it? Was it just my imagination? Or was it some extension of a secret knowledge that he didn't want to reveal to me? For just a fleeting second, I had the feeling of rat feet scampering through dark and dank cellars. And so it was, on the following day, I found myself on the wheezing, puffing, somehow very self-important New Haven train on the way to Cowes Cop.
I beg your pardon. Is this seat taken?
Oh, no, it isn't.
But the coach isn't very crowded. You consider me a masher?
Well, after all,
You don't know the New Haven. How quickly the coaches fill up. In no time, we shall be at 125th, and then in quick succession, St. Mary's Park, Tremont Avenue, Bruckner Boulevard, Pelham Parkway, and 100 others I might name. And each station, pouring onto the train, the flotsam and jetsam who are fleeing the city.
And your endeavor, since the car is practically empty at the moment, except for us, is to protect me from this possible flotsam and jetsam.
Not at all. I just happen to think you're the most attractive woman I ever remember seeing, and I'll happily make up any excuse to sit with you.
Well, I really can't think of one that's good enough.
No, come on. How far are you going?
Not nearly so far as you might like. Cowes Cop.
Well, now there's a coincidence. The same stop as myself. I'm on my way up to, Actually, it's a highly penitential journey. I'm on the way up to see my mother. If you know Cowes Cop, you should know or have heard of my mother. Her name is Mrs. Carter Rensselaer.
I looked at the handsome young man standing beside me, his gloves and his fedora held casually, but so stylishly. His hair a light brown and wavy. His eyes a deep, almost steel blue. And as I looked, a wave of what? Anticipation? Pleasure? Excitement? Or perhaps something even stronger welled up in me, constricting my throat.
Did you hear me?
Yes, I... Yes, of course.
I get the impression you did recognize my mother's name.
Oh, indeed, I did.
Then do I pass muster, and may I sit down?
I'm sorry. Please do sit, Mr. Rensselaer.
At last. What a relief.
I didn't mean to keep you standing so long.
My dear young lady, it's no relief to be off my feet. I was swept from them the moment I saw you. The relief is that you did not deny me your company.
I could scarcely do that to my employer's son.
What?
I've been engaged by your father to be nurse to your mother at Broomwagon. My name is Linda Barclay. Didn't your father tell you about me?
My father and I, Miss Barclay, are not on speaking terms. You said nurse? Tell me, is my mother worse? What does she need a nurse for?
Well, I understand she had a fall.
Mother? That's strange. A fall. How? Who was with her?
I really don't know the details. I believe Mrs. Greaves or her son Jason found her.
Mrs. Greaves? Is she back? What happened to Bunty?
Bunty?
Bunty, yes, Bunty. She was our housekeeper all the years I was growing up. She was almost more of Mrs. Bunter, her name was. She was a darling. Did she die?
I don't know.
I hope not. And my mother, how badly hurt is she from the fall?
I can't answer. I believe she had an injury to her head and is in a wheelchair.
Oh, no. A moment or so ago, after I met you, I wanted this pokey old train to take all the time in the world or even break down. Now I can't wait for it to get to Broomwagon. I have a ghastly feeling old ghosts are abroad again. If you'll excuse me, I think I shall repair to the bar car.
As abruptly as he had appeared, he was gone. I remained looking after him for a long while, the passing countryside forgotten as my mind was filled with speculation. Jason Greaves was taller than my employer's son and heavy and dark and powerful looking. But his teeth had been startlingly white against his swarthy complexion as he greeted me with a smile that faded as quickly as it had come when he saw Mr. Roosevelt Jr. Now, riding in a carriage from the station, I was painfully conscious of powerful undercurrents of feeling between these two men. It was obvious that they disliked each other, but it seemed to be more from instinct than from acquaintance.
Oh, it's all... there we are. And here we are.
That's broom wagon over there on the island, perched high on the rocks.
But it's a real island. Open water all around. Well, what happened to the bridge? Must we go by boat?
Well, Jason, must we, or is it out of service again?
No, Mr. Roosevelt. I keep it in service or out of service as is indicated. Excuse me a minute.
Where's he gone?
Oh, you'll see, to the bridge house over there. One at each end of the bridge can be operated from either side.
I don't see any bridge.
You see what looks like a dock? Over on the island side.
Yes.
Yep. Now watch it. It's hinged in the middle and operated partly by hydraulics, partly by the set of the tide, and part by counterweights. See? Look at that. It opens just like a huge arm. And when it's straight, it reaches from shore to shore. Some people, like my father, who belongs back in the Middle Ages, must have their precious privacy at all costs. Look at that nonsense. It's ingenious, isn't it?
Why, it's incredible.
Like the man who spawned it. And the rest of our private brood, whom you are about to meet. Unless you want to fly now while you still have the chance, Miss Barclay.
I don't know what you mean.
I'm not sure I do myself. It's just a feeling I have about my dear ancestral birthplace. So, the damn thing still works, Jason.
As you can see, Master Ted. As long as you know how to handle it. Hey! Up there, boys!
Don't look so scared, Linda.
I'm not scared.
Jason, why the devil, if you knew Miss Barclay was coming, even if you didn't know about me, didn't you leave the bridge in place?
Mr. Roosevelt's orders. Never left in place, except when it's to be used.
By whom?
By whoever is authorized.
Hmm. But the question really is, old Beetlebrow, what is its real purpose? To keep the public out or to shut the family in?
I slid a sideways look at this handsome young man beside me whose moods changed like a chameleon. And inside, I felt a cold and icy shudder. I wanted to cry out, take me back. But we were already over the bridge and on our way up the steep driveway that wound its way up to that great dark house. In the gathering dark, it loomed like some huge monster. And I had a feeling of terror lurking in and around it and the unnamed things that cried out in the night. Was to hear and see, but it was too late to turn back.
Dear me. Now mark you, the ladies in these old Gothic mysteries did have a penchant for, or a habit of, overstatement. But in Linda's case... Well, I shall leave you to judge that for yourselves when I return with Act Two.
Not all batteries are created equal. Some last a lot longer than others, like the unequaled Ever-Ready Alkaline Power Cell batteries from your nearby True Value hardware store. Hi, Pat Summerall here with the details. They're unequal because they use a chemical system that's entirely different from that of regular batteries. The extra power they provide makes them ideal for portable radios and tape recorders. In fact, any device you use frequently or for long periods of time. And they'll hold their power for months when they're not in use. So they're perfect for devices you use only intermittently, such as calculators and cameras. True Value Hardware Stores offer Ever-Ready Alkaline Power Cell batteries in popular C, D, and AA sizes, so you'll get power you can depend on with the battery that was created more equal than others. Ever-Ready Alkaline Power Cell batteries are just one of the values you'll find at the participating True Value Hardware Store near your home. True Value, remember, more than just a name,
It's their way of doing business. Just tell them Pat Summerall sent you.
15 minutes. It's a very short time. Not enough time to do much. You can't read a book or plant a garden or see a movie. But if your friend has had too much to drink, 15 minutes is plenty of time for him to get into a car and drive down a dark road and run into a tree or another car and die. In 15 minutes, your friend could be dead forever. Don't let that happen. Care for him. Do something. In the same short 15 minutes, you could save your friend's life. With a few cents worth of gas, you could drive him home safely, or you could put him into a cab. Take the time to care for a friend. 15 minutes. That's all it would take. If you don't take the time, if you let him drive and your friend dies, think of all the years and years you'll have to live with it. Friends don't let friends drive drunk. A public service message on behalf of the U.S. Department of Transportation.
One element is never missing from all true Gothic tales: the house. That gloom-shrouded mansion in whatever special guise it appears. Broomwagon. High on a rocky island, barely separated from the Connecticut coastland, which some ancient Roosevelt ancestor built. Massive stone and mortar, it is intimidating before one enters it, and even more so after one is inside.
First night, I didn't meet my patient. Mrs. Greaves, the housekeeper, served us all dinner, and we retired early. My room was on the second floor, right next to Mrs. Roosevelt's bedroom, Mrs. Greaves had told me, but quite a way beyond it as you went down the hall. I had stopped for just a moment in curiosity outside my room to the patient's door, and then quickly, ashamed of myself, moved to my own room and had just entered when I heard the sound of a door closing and a key in the lock. I looked out, and Mr. Ted Roosevelt was in the hall.
Oh, I'm sorry, Linda. Did I disturb you?
But no, I, just the sound of the door attracted my attention.
I was with, my mother.
How is she?
Asleep. You look a little strange.
Well, it's nothing, just that. Well, nothing.
Oh, come on. You can't fob me off like that. What is it?
Oh, silly. I thought you came from that door on the other side of the hall.
That? No, scarcely. That goes to the third floor in the turret rooms. Part of the house that's been shut off for years. Nobody uses that door.
I'm sorry. It was just an impression.
Linda, trust me. Believe me, I may be the only one you can in this house.
That's all a dream. I remember waking up that first night at Broomwagon. Somewhere, far away as from another world, and yet I knew it was in the house. There was this terrible, agonizing animal sound. Alone in that strange, dark room with the massive oak chests and the high, ornate wardrobes pressing in from the walls, I could feel the panic, bitter as bile, in the back of my throat. But either it was a nightmare, or I was worn out from excitement and the long journey, for suddenly it was morning, and the sun was streaming in.
Oh, mercy, child, you startled me. Oh, you're up early, surely.
But I couldn't sleep.
Why?
Oh, the excitement in a new place, I suppose. You know, new surroundings.
Oh, is that all?
What more should it be?
You didn't hear anything?
What sort of thing?
Oh, anything out of the ordinary.
Well, I was half asleep in the middle of the night, and I heard I don't know how to describe it, even if I really did hear it.
Oh, it was probably a bad dream. This musty old house produces a lot of sounds. Perhaps it was the madam.
No, it sounded farther away than that.
Oh, you can't rightly tell. It's echoey, like a tomb here. You never know what you're hearing or where it's coming from. Well, Well, I have coffee on and bacon frying. Will you have eggs?
Just some juice and coffee and toast is enough for me.
Stomach a little queasy, huh?
Yes.
Well, I'm not surprised. Look, this is no place for a girl like you. Pick up your skirts and run while you have the chance.
While she has the chance for what, Mrs. Greaves?
I didn't know you were there, Master Ted. I'm
sure you didn't. Because weren't you advising Miss Barclay to get out of here before she's even found out what the job is all about?
Oh, not exactly. Oh, but you've seen your mother. It's a very difficult job for a young girl, and I...
Whatever you want, Mrs. Greaves, I want her to stay. And my father's engaged her. You and your son are the ones I'm surprised to see back here.
Well, it's where I belong.
I'll know better about that soon. Come on. Let's have breakfast. While you're getting it, I'll take Linda up to Mother.
Shall I bring up Mrs. Rensselaerts' tray?
No, Linda can come and get it when she feels like eating. If, you wouldn't mind, Linda.
Oh, of course not. It's why I'm here, to serve her.
The only good reason I can think of why you should be. Come on. Let's go meet the lady.
I don't know what I expected, but certainly not what I saw. A bright, pert little woman with eyes as bright and darting and alive as a bird, who may have been in a wheelchair, but didn't look confined to it at all. At least, that was my first impression. But it didn't take long to change it. It was all a mask. This was a woman broken by life, terrified of something total and nameless, locked in a silent cage where no birds could sing, not even herself.
Mother, it's Ted again.
She's trying to say something, Ted. What?
I don't know. I wish to God I did. Mother, I want you to meet Miss Linda Barclay. Yes, she's come to take care of you.
How do you do, Mrs. Rensselaerts? I hope I can be of help. Is there anything I can get you? That's right. Yes. Yes, to help you. As far as our conversation went, just that one possible word, and it terrified me, because I wasn't sure of its meaning. Did she mean just that she was glad to have someone give a physical aid, or was it a cry of despair? Or was it my imagination being too lively? At any rate, Ted, didn't seem to share my apprehensions as he walked me downstairs so that I could fetch the tray for Mrs. Rensselaerts' breakfast.
This damn flagstone staircase, dangerous as hell. I don't know why my father would never let these steps be carpeted.
Is this where your mother fell?
I don't know. It's all a bit vague. A lot of things vague around here.
Your mother, did you get the impression that she's scared of something?
Well, wouldn't you be in her condition? Just take care of her. Stay with her at all times, and I'll take care of you.
Are you going to be staying?
At least until my esteemed male parent gets back here where he belongs. Excuse me?
Oh, is the madam ready for breakfast?
Linda can get it for her and her own and take them up. I want to talk to you for a moment.
I'll prepare the breakfasts.
Mrs. Greaves, what happened to Bunty?
Why, she was a very old woman after all, Master Rensselaerts. She just died.
How?
In her sleep. We found her dead in her bed.
We? Who is we?
Well, actually, it was Jason.
Jason? How could he find her? What was Jason doing here?
Well, your father had been nice enough to hire my son for general work, you see, and he was living in. Well, one morning, Bunty wasn't up bright and spry as usual, so he went up to her room, as I know the story, for of course I wasn't here, and there she was. Laid out, sweet and restful, but quite dead.
I wish I'd known. It was quite a shock to me to learn it this late.
Oh, but I thought you did. Jason said you were up here the very night she died in Cascade.
Oh, I was, but the damn bridge was sewed up tight. I couldn't seem to attract anyone's attention. So I had to go back to New York.
Oh, well, didn't your father tell you?
My father and I haven't talked since...
Perhaps you're right. I suppose family skeletons are best left in the closet. Except...
Except what?
They ought to be kept in the family and not involve any more people than already have to live with them.
I couldn't help overhearing most of the conversation, and especially that last. For while I kept myself busy at the stove, my eyes glued to making toast and eggs and so forth, I was only too aware that Ted's eyes, at least, were looking towards me. What is it they're all afraid of, I kept thinking to myself. Not only then, but through the rest of the day and the days that followed. Until a special night. Not so much later, when I woke up in my own bed hearing...
What is it?
I
saw you walking again. Help me.
I was ashamed of myself, but it was a primitive reaction. Above me, in a dream or in waking, had loomed a face from the churchyard or the grave. Parchment white, drained of blood. Was it vision or reality?
Are you all right?
Yes, I'm sorry.
Well, what happened?
I don't know how to say it. There was a someone or something here. A pale white as a ghost and not quite human.
Oh,
that's
a bad dream.
What else?
I'm sorry. You must be right. It's just... Where's Ted? I mean Mr. Rensselaerwelt.
Ted? I don't know. Right at this moment, I guess it's something we'd all like to know.
So, there we have it. The basic of the Gothic premise. What has this sweet, innocent young girl got herself entangled in? What web of mystery and death? And how can she handle it? Or at least extricate herself before it's too late? I shall return shortly with Act 3.
It's 2 a.m. A man is at your back door, cutting out one of the small panes of glass. He knows that you're asleep upstairs. But he doesn't know that waiting for him, right down the hall, is a master lock burglar alarm, the new Ultrasound X. It looks like a small stereo speaker, just plugs into any electrical outlet. When it senses movement, it starts screaming, and it can set off remote alarms by sending a signal over the household wiring. It'll even set off remote alarms in a neighbor's house. The man eases the glass out, reaches in, unlocks your door, and you're safe. You can have this electronic burglar protection for less than you might think. To find the nearest Master Lock Alarm dealer, call this toll-free number right now, 800-528-6050, 800-528-6050. Call tonight and sleep tight tomorrow night.
One of the great pleasures in life. But a steady diet of the wrong kinds of food, the fatty ones we all seem to crave, can endanger your heart and increase your risk of heart attack. This is Van McCoy with a tip from the American Heart Association. A balanced diet, low in calories and saturated fat, can tip the scales in favor of your heart's health. Eat hearty with low-fat dairy products, lean meats, and crispy vegetables. Ask your Heart Association for more diet information. They're fighting for your life.
In all good Gothic mysteries, it is question time now. How did Mrs. Bunter, the former housekeeper, really die? Is Ted Roosevelt as charming and desirable a man to love as Linda would like to believe? Or does he pose a threat to her? Where is Mr. Roosevelt? And what is the specter that haunts Linda, either in reality or in her dreams?
The following days were the strangest of my life. There seemed to be a conspiracy of silence about Broomwagon. Poor Mrs. Roosevelt was held helpless, unable to speak, though often watching her eyes, I was sure she wanted to. For days now she had been confined to her bed. Ted had disappeared mysteriously, and I even had the idea that Jason and his mother didn't know whether he was on the island or if he wasn't, how he had gotten to the mainland. I had no further visits from the white man or dreams, and I went about my daily tasks in a sort of stupor, till at last I couldn't stand it, and I followed Jason down into the cellar one day.
Who is it?
It's me, Jason. Linda.
Oh. What are you doing down here?
Nothing. I just wanted to talk to you.
Did you have to follow me to the cellar?
No, but I haven't had a chance to see you alone, and I was curious.
Curious about what?
I'm only human. Curious about all of this strange old place.
Oh, why pick the cellar?
I didn't. You did. And I'm just as curious about all the upper floors.
Oh, why?
Just normal interest. Doesn't anyone ever go up there? Why are they all closed off?
Saves on the heat bill.
All right. Is that why the door is locked?
How do you know it is?
I tried it.
Why?
Well, the first night that I was here, I thought I...
Yes?
But I thought I saw Ted, I mean Mr. Roosevelt Jr., coming from that door.
Well, did you now? And why would he be going up there?
Well, maybe to visit someone. Jason, is there someone else up there or living in the house, someone that I haven't met?
Well, I don't know what you mean.
I don't understand. I'm really quite level-headed normally, but this man, the man with the parchment face and the snow-white hair, the one who sometimes wanders at night...
You're not sounding very level-headed now.
Oh, I guess not. Oh, I am sort of scared.
Well, then, Linda, want to take my advice. Get out. Get out while the getting's good.
Yes, that's what your mother said.
My mother isn't always so smart, but if she warned you off, then she was.
But what do I have to be afraid of?
I'll let you answer that question for yourself, since you were the one who brought it up.
Oh, I just can't walk out without seeing... Where is Mr. Roosevelt Sr.? Doesn't he ever come here?
He'll be here at the end of the week, but if I were you, I wouldn't wait for him.
Why not? I have to be paid.
Jason! Jason, is Miss Barclay down there with you?
Yes, Mom, what is it?
It's Mrs. Roosevelt. She's having some kind of a fit or something. I think she needs her nurse.
As I hurried up the stairs with Mrs. Greaves, I sensed that her summons was not as urgent as it seemed to be. So I took the opportunity to ask a few questions I hadn't had a chance to.
It's just that I'm so worried about the poor little thing.
Mrs. Greaves, Ted, Master Roosevelt, when I first met him, said that he was surprised that you were back. You worked here before?
Oh, dear me, yes. I started out as the upstairs maid when we had a whole proper staff here with a butler.
But you left...
Well, I had my first... I mean, you know, Jason to bring up. And when his father left us, I had to be home with him.
You started to say your first. Do you have another child?
Oh, no. I had one born who was dead to me. Oh, but here we are, and you'd better have a look at them, madam.
I went in to Mrs. Roosevelt with so many questions I would have liked to have asked unanswered. I found her in physically acceptable shape, but nervous, and she seemed to want to be alone with me. Everything under control, Mrs. Greaves. I'll stay with her now.
You know, she is a bit much for a little slip of a girl like you. I can handle her if you want to go.
Everyone seems in such a hurry to get rid of me.
Oh, I didn't say so.
You intimated it. And both Jason and Ted have said so flatly. Why am I not wanted?
Well, maybe they were thinking of you and your well-being.
Why, am I in some danger? You don't answer. Is it the ghost, or whoever he is. The one that lives upstairs.
What do you know about upstairs?
Nothing yet.
Well, then leave it. Forget it. And if you won't go, then mind your own business.
I feel like Alice in Wonderland, curiouser and curiouser. Oh, Miss Renstifer, did you want something?
Where? My son?
Oh, I don't know where he is. I'm sorry.
No.
Not after what, dear? I'm sorry, I don't understand.
Oh, you don't know my son. Look out.
With a sigh, she sank back on the bed. I took her pulse, checked her blood pressure, her heart. All normal. She was just quietly and simply asleep. But in checking her pulse, a large old-fashioned key fell from her hand. I waited till that night to use it where I suspected it would fit. Just as I thought, it opened that mysterious door that led to the upper floors. I searched through the cobweb-strewn rooms and at length up one last small flight of stairs to the turret room. The door was open. The room was empty, but the signs that someone had lived there for a long, long time were everywhere. I suddenly had a searing vision of that poor white thing that had come to me in the night.
Looking for someone, Linda?
Oh, Jason, what are you doing here?
Now, that's really my question, isn't it? But you don't have to answer, I will. Looking for Ted Rensselaer, weren't you?
Ted? No. No, why? Is he back?
Oh, he never went away.
I don't understand.
You weren't supposed to. But you had to keep sticking your nose into everything, didn't you?
I knew it wasn't a dream. There was a man, that strange, deathly white man, wasn't there?
That's right. The real Ted Rensselaer. Last of the Rensselaer line.
What about the Ted Rensselaer that I met on the train?
Oh, you mean my half-brother.
I don't know what I mean. I'm so confused.
All right, then, Linda, let me put you straight. 27 years ago, my mother was a maid in this house. I was only a few years old and boarded out. My mother couldn't take care of me herself. She had to work to support me because my father had died. Mrs. Rensselaer was carrying her first child, and my mother was carrying a child at the same time. It's the mad fancy of some random god that Mrs. Rensselaer went full term to bear a monster. While my mother had her child early and he was perfectly healthy.
You mean that strange white man is actually the real Ted Rensselaer?
That's right. And the child my mother bore became the Ted Rensselaer you find so irresistible.
But how?
Oh, my dear, given most of the money in the world and proper isolation, anything can be accomplished. My half-brother simply replaced the idiot. For a price, of course.
And the other child?
Should have been strangled at birth. But Mrs. Rensselaer wouldn't hear of it, so he was hidden away.
Hidden away? To molder into dust in this prison here? Oh, the poor man. No wonder he's as pale as a ghost. But what's happened to him? What have you done with him?
Just moved him to the cellar, nearer the scene of action. And besides, he'd grown much too crafty about escaping from upstairs.
Well, now, what do you mean, the scene of action?
It's all coming to a head, my dear. It's too bad you had to get involved. I told you to get out. However, it doesn't matter now. It'll all be over by tomorrow night.
What will all be over?
Come along with me. I'm taking you to the cellar to join some friends.
No, I don't want to go to the cellar.
I could lug you there bodily, but why make the effort? Alive, I'd have to fight you, and dead, your only weight. Oh, yes, Linda. There is a Santa Claus who brought me this for Christmas. It's a gun. Oh, now, don't make me use it, please.
Obediently, I descended all the stairs from the turret room to the cellar, and then deeper to the sub-cellar. There was a big cave there with a harbor that looked out to the sea, and a large motor cruiser was moored at a deep water dock deep in the cave, almost directly under the house. There were some men in the cockpit, and one heavily bearded one who slung himself ashore with an easy cat movement and came to us.
We've got too much riding on this to take any chances. Take the girl and put her with the others.
The man with the beard took me to a door, opened the bar, and shoved me in. It was sort of a marine storage room, windowless with no way out except the door. And I was not alone. With me was that deathly white man and Ted. The man I knew as Ted Rensselaer.
Good Lord, Linda, they've got you too. Why?
Why you? And...
Yes, poor gentle thing. He doesn't understand what's happening.
But what is happening, Ted?
Oh, I don't know where to begin. Jason's been blackmailing my father. Well, the man I always thought was my father till I uncovered the family secret.
And when you found it out, he made you a prisoner?
The world's prize sucker. I came home to verify some suspicions I've had for years and was careless enough to let my mother, my real mother, Mrs. Greaves, put some knockout drops in something I drank before I went to bed. I woke up here with my, what is he? Brother in misfortune?
What shall be found?
The poor thing. How could anyone hurt him?
How could anyone hurt him more? But Linda, he has less to worry about than you and I. We've got to get out of this.
What do we have to worry about?
My father.
What?
The man who wants to think of me as his son. Can you imagine this nonsense? This rage for immortality. This crazy passion to have the line carried on as if we were an ancient line of kings. Carter Rensselaer, above anything else, must have an heir to satisfy him. And it can't be this poor creature.
What?
Shh, now you will. But you are his heir. How can Jason hope
Don't
to...
Don't you see it, Linda? Carter Rensselaer is a very rich man. He's on his way here with a ransom to free me as of this moment.
But that doesn't work. I mean, even if he pays it, the whole idea of kidnapping, extortion, whatever you want to call it, is that the criminal has to be anonymous. Now, if everyone knows it's Jason...
Then, everyone who's a witness against him, including the old man, can't be around to testify.
Well, that means all of us. How?
That's how I got caught and put away. See, he has this whole place mined. He can blow Broomwagon sky high with one touch on the button. And he has his ship standing by to escape on.
Well, how do we stop him?
Go on. I'm going. I want to go home.
Oh, shh. Soon now.
How do we stop Jason? Now, that's the question.
All right, everyone.
You took me from my room in the sky. I go back now.
All right, knucklehead, just stay where you are.
I want to go home.
Back off.
Go home to rest.
Get back, will you? Now, this is a gun.
I want to go home.
No, don't. He has a gun.
Away from me, will you? You idiot. Keep up.
Pain. Got pain. You did that.
Oh my wrist. No. You got me. Get your hands off my throat. You. No.
Stay back, Linda. I'll get the gun. Linda, are you all right?
Yes, but he's still... Oh, he's still choking him. Get his fingers off Jason's throat.
I can't. They're locked tight.
Well, it won't make any difference. His pulse is gone. I guess that poor white man didn't know his own strength.
He strangled him?
Partly. But first, I think he broke his neck.
I can't tell you how sorry I am to have exposed you to all this, Miss Barclay. When I hired you, I had no idea...
Please, Mr. Rensselaer, don't worry about me.
Yes, thanks to my adopted son and you, and good luck, I have few worries anymore. Jason is dead, his gang dispersed, and my poor unfortunate son is better off dead. For the first time in 27 years, my wife can know a little peace. Now, my dear, what can I do for you who seems to have been a lucky charm in return?
Well, let me ask that question, Dad. Linda, I wanted to ask it the first day on the train. Will you marry me?
Now, there's the way a good Gothic mystery should end. The right people are alive, the ghosts laid to rest, and the heroine ends up by marrying the hero. Old-fashioned? Perhaps. But aren't we all looking back a little these days in the hope that the ones ahead will be a little more like the days gone by? I'll be back shortly.
Here in my hand is a little capsule. It's Contact. It contains enough cold medicine to help relieve cold symptoms caused by every known virus. Think about that the next time you're sick. Sneezing, dripping, all clogged up. Then let us help you with real medicine, like Contact. We're number one in the whole world.
Give your cold to Contact. Real medicine for real cold.
Take only as directed.
7-Up the Uncola explains the undue process.
I'll have a hamburger, fries, and a cola.
You've heard that before, plenty of times. An order that everyone seems to be rattling off. Well, now you can undo all that with 7-Up as a change of course. You see, when you undo, 7-Up breaks you away from your routine by adding an extra sparkle of refreshment to your meal. So go ahead, take it back. And undo it with 7-Up.
I'll have a hamburger, fries, and the Uncola.
Hemorrhoid sufferers, the proof is here. Proof from leading doctors and hospitals of a medication that helps shrink swelling of hemorrhoidal tissues caused by inflammation. It's doctor-tested, hospital-tested Preparation H. Hundreds of tests prove that in many cases, Preparation H gives prompt temporary relief of occasional pain and itch and helps shrink swollen, inflamed hemorrhoidal tissues. Preparation H, ointment or suppositories, use only as directed. Doctor-tested, hospital-tested Preparation H helps shrink swollen hemorrhoidal tissues.
At the Opal Isuzu Information Center of America, pandemonium reigns as thousands of people try to find out what one is.
Hello, Opal Isuzu Information Center.
Say, I think I've got an Opal Isuzu.
Good for you, sir. Can you describe it?
Well, it's about 4 feet high, brown, tan hair on its neck. It's got cute little eyes.
Sir, I believe that's a Shetland pony.
Oh, yeah. I can see that now.
See the little hoofs?
Opal Isuzu, a great new little car at your Buick Opal dealers.
The guilt and the long agony of knowing she had concealed her real son brought freedom to Mrs. Renzevelt. The mental anguish relieved, more and more she found that she could walk and move. She and Mr. Renzevelt Sr. travel a good deal now. The younger Renzevelts have returned to New York and live as happy cliff dwellers. For them, a house is definitely not a home. Our cast included Betsy Palmer, Russell Horton, Bryna Rayburn, and Ian Martin. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. Radio Mystery Theater was sponsored in part by Contact, the 12-hour cold capsule. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
News coming up next on KIXI. Increasing cloudiness with rain likely by tomorrow morning, with some rainy periods continuing through Friday. Highs in the mid-50s and lows in the upper 40s. In downtown Seattle currently, it's 55 degrees. The barometer holding steady. It reads 30.13.
In the air, everywhere, bright and beautiful music. KIXI, Seattle.
And the time at KIXI, 11 p.m.
CBS News. A federal court order has been issued temporarily restraining the United States government from any further negotiations with Panama on a new Panama Canal treaty. I'm Mike Stanley reporting on the CBS Radio Network. The order was issued by U.S. District Court Judge Guthrie Crow, sitting in the Canal Zone and responding to a petition filed by the Canal Zone Central Labor Union Chairman William Drummond. That petition charged that the negotiations threatened to infringe without due process of law on the property or liberty of some 40,000 Americans residing in the canal zone or otherwise involved in the operation of the canal. The jurist's restraining order is addressed to President Ford, Secretary of State Kissinger, and Ambassador Ellsworth Bunker, the senior American representative in the negotiations with Panama. More CBS News in a moment.
I'm Sylvia Porter, and if you read my daily newspaper column, you know how hard I try to help you stretch your dollars. Now I'm trying even harder, for my number one bestseller, Sylvia Porter's Money Book, is in paperback. In it, you'll find all you want to know about money, how to earn it, spend it, save it, borrow it, invest it, use it to better your life. Buy Sylvia Porter's Money Book now. It's a super value.
Sylvia Porter's Money Book, now in Avon paperback.
On July 4th, America held the biggest birthday party ever, our 200th. And come the first Tuesday in November, there's another great event, the presidential election. I'm George Herman, CBS News, urging you to get out and vote. And then listen to all the returns when Neil Strauser and I, along with the CBS News team, are here with complete election night coverage. Hear your vote count Tuesday night, November 2nd, on the CBS Radio Network.
Both presidential candidates are in Pennsylvania overnight at opposite ends of the state. President Ford, after campaigning during the day in southern New Jersey, is in Philadelphia, where he said he senses his campaign now has the momentum for a Harry Truman-type upset victory. Jimmy Carter, in Pittsburgh, after a midtown Manhattan rally that exceeded anything in the campaign to date, pledged granting tax relief will be a top priority of his administration. Carter said economists saw a tax cut as an almost inevitable part of his program of achieving increased federal revenues through reduced unemployment and boosted economic growth. In Austin, Texas, at a news conference, former Governor John Connally, campaigning for President Ford, pointed the accusing finger at Congress for recent inflation.
Nothing contributes more to the inflationary trend in this country than the reckless spending of the Congress of the United States. And they try to hide it. And they all want to talk about Congress being the answer to inflation. If they could just get elected, they'd sure, the government could sure end inflation. The truth of the matter is, if Congress would take a sabbatical for about 4 years and do nothing but vote for the appropriation bills and go home, we'd be in much better shape. We could probably do something about inflation in this country.
Democratic vice presidential candidate Walter Mondale in Dayton, Ohio, also is talking about inflation, and coincidentally, about Connally, too.
You know, after my debate the other night with Mr. Dole, they asked that great commoner from Texas, John Connally, who had won the debate. And he said, I think Mondale lost because he kept talking about inflation. And Mr. Connally said, you know, inflation isn't bad. Well, maybe if you make $200,000 a year, it isn't bad. But if you're an American living on an average income, inflation is killing you, and we got to get a president with a courage like John Kennedy to stand up and fight it again.
A late item, terrorists in Paris exploded a powerful plastic bomb in the new headquarters of the international police organization Interpol late Wednesday night, shattering the entrance hall, damaging several offices. No casualties were reported. More after this.
start it over in France. But you can enjoy it right here. Straight up, on the rocks, or mixed with your favorite beverage. Duvernay before. Before lunch or dinner or whatever you got cooking. There's a drink you may not know about. It sort of whispers what those others have to shout.
Duvernay, anyway.
A taste that's not too sweet. Oh no, it's not too tart. Girl, it's made for those who finish what they start.
Duvernay, any day, anyway. What you say?
Duvernay, a product of USA. Duvernay Corp, New York, New York.
Duvernay, any day.
The Union Bank of Switzerland has been surveying cost of living in cities around the world. In a survey of 41 major cities, food costs are highest in Tokyo, Stockholm, and Geneva, cheapest in Bogota, Buenos Aires, and Dublin. Clothing costs are highest in Manama, the capital of Bahrain, followed by Paris, Hong Kong, and Geneva, while cheapest clothes are found in Bogota, London, and Singapore. Apartments are most costly in New York and Panama, cheapest in Manila and Vienna. For restaurant and hotel prices, Manama, Paris, and Buenos Aires top the list. The lowest are found in Bogota, Johannesburg, and Madrid. Mike Stanley, CBS News.
KIXI Seattle with the time is 6 minutes past 11.